Welcome, everyone, to the Friday Forum webinar, and happy spring. I'm Marianne Stumbaugh, Assistant Director of Alumni Career Services here at the Alumni Association at UVA, and I'm very pleased to introduce Diana Sun as our alumni presenter for today's Friday Forum. Diana received her bachelor's degree from UVA in 1975. She was in the second class of women to graduate from the university. She is currently pursuing a master's degree from the Naval Postgraduate School in Homeland Security, which she reports is very challenging and also incredibly rewarding. Diana estimates that she is on her fifth career and says that she is living proof that you really cannot make a career mistake. You just need to learn from every experience and make lemonade everywhere you go. Diana is active in several professional and volunteer organizations, including UVA. She has served on the editorial board of Virginia Magazine, been a member of the board of managers here at the Alumni Association, and served as chair of UVA's Asian and Asian Pacific American Alumni Network, also known as APAN. In their spare time, Diana and her husband travels throughout the world seeking adventures, from an African safari and gorilla watching in Rwanda, to sightseeing in Bhutan, to scuba diving off the coast of Costa Rica and sailing the Greek islands. With her wide variety of work and travel experiences, Diana has become an expert in communicating clearly and effectively in any situation. Today, her presentation is full of terrific tips on how you, too, can be a great spokesperson. So here is Diana Sun with Strategic Messaging, How to Get Your Point Across.
Thank you so much, Marianne. Can you hear me now? I had a little trouble with the microphone there. So hopefully you can hear me. Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. I really appreciate it. I have actually a lot of content to get through, so I'm going to just jump right to it. And we're here to talk about how to get your point across clearly, succinctly, most effectively. And hopefully you all know that in this chat software here, you can enter questions into the chat, so please do that at any time. I encourage you to do that. And I'd like to start off by asking you what type of situation it is that you feel you need the most help. Is it a media interview? Is it a job interview? Is it a discussion at work? Is it a staff meeting? Is it maybe running into somebody at the water cooler or the grocery store? So just go ahead and pop those into the chat. And let's get going. I am going to speak to you about getting your point across in the context of a media interview with reporters. And that may not be your biggest challenge, but it is one of the more difficult venues, one of the more difficult audiences. So if you can use these techniques and learn them through the context of the media, they can be useful to you for, of course, working with the media, but for a job interview, for staff meetings, for presentations, for board presentations. So I hope you can hear it in that context. And yes, so some of you are saying that you do have these different situations, job interviews, executive presentations, stakeholders, elevator speech, yes. So I think you'll find that these techniques are going to be helpful to you in all those situations. Now, I'd like you to think about when you've either yourself or you've seen something on TV, when it's been a good interview, what is it about it that was a good interview? What was it about it that made it a good interview? So if you can go ahead and put some thoughts in there about what made it a good interview, and also conversely, when you either did an interview or you've seen one on TV and it did not go well, what was it about that that made it a bad interview? And just go ahead and write some things in there for me, and I'll keep going, and we'll come back to that, and I'll address those. My thought for you for today and what I'm going to move through for you is to learn the rules of engagement for the media. It is like playing a game. It's an interview game, and we need to know the rules of engagement so that we can play the game. And to break through the clutter, there's a lot of noise out there today. And how can we take advantage of every opportunity and minimize the pitfalls? Thank you all for putting some thoughts in there for the good interviews. Being able to get your points across, yes, very good. Okay, thank you. My goal for you for this session is to, for me to help you learn how to have control, confidence, and credibility with an interview. Now that may, you know, sometimes people think, oh, that word control, that seems an odd word, but you can have control over your piece of the interview and control what it is that you get across. And I personally believe that all great spokespeople are coached. I don't believe that this is something where you're a natural born great spokesperson. I had the opportunity to work with President Clinton's media coach at one point, and you know, Bill Clinton's pretty good, but even he gets coaching. So, you know, I believe this is something that it is a technique and it can be learned, and I'm going to help give you some tips today. All right, just a few moments on the media environment, because we need to know what the rules are so that we can operate within them. First of all, what is news? And this is just an important dynamic for us to understand. News is change. Oh, I'm trying to use my little pointer. I'll get it. There we go. News is change, conflict, and controversy. And if you throw a celebrity in there, it ends up being page A1. So this is today's Washington Post. This is the front page. And if you look at the lead story, Obama urges Mideast talks. And so if you think about it, that is change, that's conflict, that's controversy, and it's celebrity with the president. This story here is a story about a U.S. federal program in which immigrants, this is a Dutch immigrant couple on a dairy farm, that they can make investments. This particular couple has invested $500,000 into a hotel that's being built in the district. And if that investment goes well, they're going to be able to stay. So that's a change story, conflict and controversy, and so forth. This is a story about some problems on a reservation and how the sequester is going to hurt that community. So you can see change, conflict, controversy. So it's just important for us to realize what news is. And it works for us both ways. We can understand it from the reporter's standpoint, but we can also, if we want to make news, we need to make it in the news context. So I hope that makes sense. All right, this is also the era of the soundbite. If you look at the broadcast news media, the average soundbite today on the evening news is 9 seconds. It's not very long. They'll do a really long story in a minute and a half. That'll be probably one of the longer stories they'll do. So, you know, you've got 9 seconds. So you may say to me, oh, Diana, my issue is very complicated. I need 2 minutes for my issue to really explain it. Okay, you take your 2 minutes. The reporter's going to go back to the studio. They will choose the 9 seconds. Is that what you want? No, I want the 2 minutes. Well, you're not going to get it. This is the state of the soundbite. All right, in terms of the print media, it started with USA Today, and those stories are very short. Only one of them continues to an inward page. This is the DC Examiner, which is a local paper here in DC, although there are other ones around the country. And actually, ironically, this paper just announced it's going to stop printing its daily edition later this summer. But the average story in the Examiner is anywhere from 200 to 400 words, very short. We have a $1 billion budget in our government, and that story will be done in 200 words, very short. So, you know, you can decry the state of journalism today, but this is the state we're operating in. So it's a soundbite world. The media is also in a dynamic situation. We just talked about the Examiner, which is going to stop issuing the print edition. This is the Rocky Mountain News, which stopped publishing after 150 years of being in business. The staffs are shrinking. It is really a tough time. It means that your message is more important now than ever, but it also presents opportunities. If you can craft an entire story and hand it over, these reporters, our DC Examiner reporter is writing 4 to 5 stories a day. That is very fast, so very little time to do research and whatnot. So if you can do a lot of the work and hand it over, you have a decent chance. And for those of you're just joining us, I am speaking about this in the context of the media, but these techniques can still work for job interviews, executive presentations, elevator, they can work for different purposes. So I want you to just consider that as we go forward. In terms of social media, this is rapidly expanding influence. Many mainstream news sources are using these sources as their news sources. You know, you constantly see that on the evening news where Twitter feeds are coming in. Very rapid expanse, tremendous opportunities to share messages. This has really saved us, I think, in the collapse, or not the collapse, the turmoil of the mainstream media. The rules of engagement are a little bit different. The speed is very fast and the voice is more authentic. But you knew that. Now that we've talked a little bit about the media environment, how do we make our game plan? So this is the Latin for our motto, and since we speak Latin, it is the Latin for always prepared. And how do we do that? So there's some basic groundwork that you need to do. You need to understand the type of publication, because speaking to USA Today is very, very different from speaking to Bridge Engineers Monthly. So you need to understand what publication is about, who's reading it, what type of interview, is it live, is it taped, is it in person, is it on the phone, and who's the reporter, how much do they know? There's many, many times when I'm doing an interview where I literally have to explain to people, this is where Arlington is. This is how big we are. We're right across the river from D.C. Some reporters don't know that. So you need to understand who it is that you're talking to. All right. I've taken a few minutes to get here, but this is really the heart of what I have to say to you today. So if you don't take away anything else, please remember this. It is all about your agenda. And sometimes I and others use different words for this. We could say talking points, message points. It's all the same thing. It is what you are there to move forward. So you can think of it as the core of your strategy. It's what you're there to do. It's a few key concise points. Research tells us that people really cannot remember more than about 3 different thoughts in a single setting. So just think about that. You know, it's why the 3 are so powerful, for God, for country, and for Yale. The idea of 3 is powerful because it's very memorable. You're able to remember it. And, the 10 commandments, very difficult. It's 10. It's too many. So you want to get, I have 12 important points. They're all equally important. Well, people won't remember 12. So perhaps you could go up a level and think about 3 umbrella points under which your 12 points can fit. And then those 12 can be proof points for the 3 umbrella points. Think about that. They also work for you in terms of focus and shelter. So on the offensive side, whether you're talking about your own resume or your program or your company, you probably have a million things you could say positive about your product. Well, that's too many. So the agenda hones it in and gives you focus for what you're going to talk about. It's also your shelter. If you end up in a yucky situation, some kind of defensive posture, you can run to your shelter. These are the things that you can say. And you have to have an agenda. If you have no agenda, then you're just there answering the questions. And probably one of the more famous recent examples is Sarah Palin during the election cycle did not have an answer for anything on the topic of foreign policy, and that just did not go well. She just should have had an answer in a way, a shelter answer for that, or a proactive answer to get at that point. I see some people talking about background noises, which I actually don't hear, but hopefully Marianne can look into that and see if there's something that could be done with the background noise. In terms of your agenda, we do not want to say these words. We do not want to say these words. They look very defensive. They actually look like you have something to hide. There's no reason to say them. There's a lot of things that you can say that are not these two words. So just not these two words. And I hope that makes sense. All right, there's a couple of things about this technique of getting your point across that I'm going to try to help you learn. And there are two main ones that are kind of unnatural, unnatural for us as humans. And this is the first one. It's repeating. And you probably learned it first at home where your parents said, now don't repeat yourself. You already said that. But in this context of getting your point across, you actually need to repeat. You could use different words, but the main point you need to repeat. And why is that? So let's look at it. In the media context, you're going to talk to a reporter. They're going to take notes. They don't write down every word that you say, but they'll take notes. They'll leave you. They'll go back and they'll look at their notes and they'll write a story. They're not going to write everything down. Then they will hand it over to an editor and a headline writer. And I don't know if you knew this, but these are actually three different people. Now, nowadays, with the consolidation and at the smaller papers, sometimes these it could be one person, and sometimes these all three could be one person. But at the bigger papers, these are three different people. So these two people never met you. And if you said your most important thing only one time, the chances of that one important thing making it all the way through are not too good. So you really need to hit your main points really hard. The other thing for anybody, any audience that you're going to be talking to, is research has showed us that people forget about two-thirds of what they've heard in 24 hours. And in 30 days, they've forgotten about 98%. This is only a 2% retention rate. That's pretty small. So your main point, you need to hit them, you need to hit them hard, you need to put proof points to them, they're your main point. And now there's certain things you can do to try to boost a retention rate. I'm doing some of them here. I'm showing it to you. Somebody asked if there will be a download. There will be. These will be available afterward. I'm telling you certain things. I'm saying to you about the agenda. If you don't remember anything else, remember this. So I'm trying to flag certain things for you to boost up certain points into your 2% retention. I'm hoping to make it into that. All right, the second unnatural thing I'm going to try to help you learn is bridging. And I'm going to talk about it in several ways because I found that different ways appeal to different people. But this is the basic point, is you are asked a question. And how can you get over to your answer? How do you make that bridge over there? And I saw that some people had commented earlier about that you don't want to look like you're sticking with talking points. You know, because that can look a little, I call it oily, if it just looks like you're ignoring the question and just going straight to your answer. I'm not saying that. I am saying you've got to address the question and get over there to your answer. And how do you do that? All right, so that's what we're going to spend a few minutes here talking about because it is a bit of a different technique. One way that I want to bring up because this is, I just thought it was a great example, is I saw an interview with Antonio Banderas a few years ago, and he was being interviewed by Katie Couric on the Today Show. And he said to her, I don't know if you remember, Katie, but I first met you when I was in the United States doing a movie tour of the Mambo Kings. I don't know, you know, raise your hand. There's a little hand below your name, but raise your hand if you remember seeing the Mambo Kings or remember that movie. Okay, so some people remember the Mambo Kings. Well, Antonio Banderas, he was his probably, I think, his first Hollywood film, and he said to Katie Couric at this interview, I didn't speak much English, and I come over to do this movie promotion tour, and I only knew four answers. And so when a reporter asked me a question, I didn't really understand the question because he didn't understand English, so he just gave one of the four answers, and they laughed. But I thought, this is really the point of being a spokesperson, is you want to be more like Antonio Banderas and less like the expert. And that's tough to do because each of us, we're an expert in whatever our area is. And the fact is, we know too much. It's better to really try to think of yourself more like Antonio Banderas and stick with what it is you're trying to get across. I hope that is making sense. Some years ago, we had a water problem here in Arlington, and the water engineers, who know a lot, were saying all this about the chemicals and the chemistry and the water flow, and it was very technical. And I, as a spokesperson, was saying things like, flush the tap for 10 minutes. And that, you know, to them, because they know so much, I must have just sounded like a two-year-old. But you want to get the point across to the audience, what is it that they need to know? And they need to know this very specific thing, and it's very clear. So I hope that's making sense. So we want to get over there to the answer. All right, this is another way to think about bridging. When reporters ask questions, they're kind of on a fishing expedition, okay? So they're asking different questions. Well, how big is your program? What's your budget? How many staff? How long have you been doing it? What are your plans? They're fishing and want some information. So one way you can think about it is when they ask questions, they are opening a window. They're opening a window on a topic. So you can listen to those questions and think, okay, they're opening a window on the topic of the size of this program to my company and how important it is. And you can say, well, you know, you're asking about how important this is to my company. Let me tell you, it's one of our top priorities, and go on from there. So you need to think about the topic, all right? I hope that's helpful. Other ways to think about bridging. If you're asked about a problem, talk about a solution. Don't go down that rabbit hole of the problem. Come up and talk about the solution. You can use smooth connecting phrases. Well, I can't be specific about that, but what I can tell you is this is a terrific product that is really going to help our customers. And Marianne is going to, I think after this webinar is closed, post not only these slides, but also I have a list, a little cheat sheet for you of smooth connecting phrases just to give you an idea of some that you could use. You can reframe the question. You can say, well, I think what you're really asking me about is how we treat the environment here in our company, and let me talk about that. We've got a great program. The point here is just don't get fixated by the question, and that's easy to do, again, because as a human, we want to be helpful. We want to answer the question, but you don't. And I want you to answer the question. I just don't want you to get fixated by the question. I want you to address the question, and then I want you to, on that topic, make a point that is one of your points. If you're skeptical listening to all of this, do you remember Robin McNeil? Raise your hand if you remember Robin McNeil. He was the McNeil of the McNeil Lair News Hour on PBS. Yeah, so some of you remembering Robin McNeil, he retired, and now Jim Lehrer is carrying on with the PBS NewsHour. But he was a highly respected newsman, many, many years in the business. And he retired, wrote a book about his many years in the business, and then went on a book tour. And because he'd had such experience, he didn't need no stinking coaching or training, so he went on the book tour. Well, he did not do well. And so he had to learn on his own some of the techniques that we're talking about today. And he had this quote to share with you. Know what you want to say and use whatever questions you're asked to say it briefly along the way. You can actually address the questions put to you or not as you choose. Just don't get so fixated by the questions you're asked that you forget to make your points. So your point is really the point, and that's where you need to put your attention. So a page out of Robin McNeil's book. So thinking about all that, our winning formula is, you know, we were at UVA, we learned lots of formulas. So here's our winning formula for getting your point across, and that is A equals Q plus 1. So we want to address the question. When we give an answer, we want to address the question, and we want to stick on a message point. This is really your job. As an employee talking about your program or presenting to a board or selling a product, this is really your job. You are not there to answer the questions. You are there to advance the agenda of your organization. So this is really your job. So if you're really only going to do the A equals Q, that's not your job as an employee. Well, if you're thinking about yourself and, say, a job interview, you need to get your point across using the questions to do that. You need to practice this. You need to try to put it into motion. I will tell you, in the beginning, it might be a little rougher. In the beginning, you might find yourself just sticking on the message point. That's okay. It will get smoother over time. I really promise you. If you were to ask my husband, he would say that he'll sometimes say to me, "Stop spinning there." And it's hard for me. It's natural. What can I say? So think about this. This is our winning formula. All right. A word about defense and offense. And I probably should just repeat that if people have questions, they should please feel free to write some questions into the chat. And I don't know if people can hear this background noise. Let me just ask them if they can quiet down a little bit. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm on a webinar. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. Hope that wasn't distracting. Okay. Just a word about the defense and the offense. On the defensive side, if you dread it, you'll get it. If you are saying to yourself, boy, I hope they don't ask me about that fraud issue from last week, or in a job interview, I sure hope they don't ask me about that gap year. Well, if you dread it, you'll get it. You better be prepared for it. You need to have an answer for it. You need to have an answer for it. You need to bridge to your agenda and run to your shelter. Your agenda is where you can always go. That's your safe place. Now, if you, on the offensive side, if you are there only to answer the questions, that is a loss. It's a lost opportunity for you. As an employee, that is not what you're there to do. And as if you're representing yourself, say in a job interview, that is not what you're there to do. You're there to advance your agenda. You need to assert your agenda. You need to bridge to it. We've talked about the technique for that. And you need to be engaged. You know, you are representing, you're the spokesperson. You're representing yourself in a job interview. You're representing your company. You're representing your product. If you're not enthusiastic and excited about what you're representing, then why should the audience be? So you really need to have that in mind. And you need to present your information strategically. And let me just talk a minute about that. So you can think about it as a reporter, or you can think about it as a lawyer. In many ways, it's very similar. So you can think about a reporter. And let me go back and say this is another thing that is a little unnatural for us as humans, that many humans, we tend to speak in a linear way. Well, first I got up, and then I did this, and then later we did this. And you need to flip it on its head, and you need to start with the conclusion. So as a reporter would do, you need to say, today there was a giant fire that claimed the lives of 10 people, and then fill in the information in an inverted pyramid and go that way. Or you need to think like a lawyer. I'm going to prove to you today that Jane shot John and killed him. She was seen in the hallway with a knife. They were heard shouting, and fill in versus starting at the beginning. And this is unnatural for us because we don't normally speak that way. But there's many reasons why you want to do this. First of all, if you start off with your headline, your main point, and fill in, the listener is going to be listening to you from that framework, of the overall framework, and they'll be listening to you a little bit differently. Also, you might get cut off halfway through, and you don't want your main point to be cut off. So think about starting with the headline. And you can bridge to, you know, Marianne talked about my lemons and lemonade earlier. There's lemons and lemonade in this context as well. This is a fairly recent interview that Anne Hathaway did on the Today Show, and she was on a promotion tour for the opening of the movie Les Mis. And you may have heard of this unfortunate situation, but at one of the premieres, there had been a photo taken of her, I think, getting out of a limo, and you could see off her dress, and it went on the web, and very unfortunate. So Anne Hathaway comes from the Today Show, and Matt Lauer is interviewing her, and he says, I have to ask you about the incident with the photo. And she said, that was very unfortunate. I felt very sad that we live in a world where somebody saw somebody in a vulnerable moment, and instead of doing the right thing and discarding the photo, they exploited it, and they publicized it, and they sold it for money. And that is very similar to the situation of my character Fantine in Les Miserables. And it was a great, awesome segue from her situation over into what she was there to do, her agenda of advancing the movie and promoting the film. And you know, this is another example of semper paratus. She had to know. She had to be prepared for the question, to know that that question might be asked and have an answer for it. And a win-win. So that is truly making lemonade out of that situation. In a crisis, does anyone here, raise your hand if you have come up with crises at work and you need to deal with them, problems, I guess we all have them. So, yes, unfortunately, many of us have crises that we need to deal with. So, in a crisis, I will tell you that your agenda needs to be, I'm sorry, let me get to that one second. Let me first bring up Wei Qi. Some of you may be familiar with this. This is the Chinese word for crisis, and it's consisting of two characters, Wei and Qi. Wei means danger, and Qi means opportunity. And together, they mean crisis. So when we're in the middle of a crisis, it doesn't feel good at all. It feels pretty terrible, but there is opportunity in crisis, and you need to remember that. And it's sometimes hard, but every situation does have some opportunities. One of the probably famous examples is the Tylenol example from, I think it was the 1990s. And are you all familiar with the Tylenol example? Raise your hand if you're not familiar with the Tylenol example. Oh, some people not familiar with it. Okay, so let me just address that briefly in the context of here. I'll do it with the next slide in the context of this. So in a crisis, your agenda should be something like this: regret, response, and restitution. So in the 1990s, I believe it was, some nefarious person put some poison or some terrible material into Tylenol, sealed it back up, put it on the store shelf. Some unwitting consumers took the Tylenol and became sickened and maybe would have died. I'm sorry, I don't remember complete details. But it was terrible. It was a terrible situation. It was not the Tylenol's makers, I believe Johnson & Johnson, it was not their fault. They did not cause the bad thing. Oh, thank you, Donald. 1980s in Chicago, but the maker did not cause the problem. They were the victim of the problem. But instead of saying we didn't do it, they said, they immediately leaped into response. They regretted it. They said, we're very sorry this happened. And they immediately took steps and invented, one of the things they invented was, as Donald points out, the tamper-resistant cap that today is a standard. But that, it was invented coming out of all that. So they immediately responded. Restitution, I believe I remember they took care of hospital bills. I mean, they totally were proactive about it, and it is today a case study for how to handle. I mean, they came out of this incident stronger than ever, Arthur's sharing, they recalled all the products, added the new cap shrink wrap, industry standard today for what we see on tamper-resistant packaging. And gosh, some of you guys from Darden and the Comm School, I'm sure, have studied this case, but they came out of this stronger than ever. And that is a case of regret and response and restitution. And there are equal cases of companies that did not do this. And the one I remember the best was, I think it was in the 90s, but Jack in the Box, at one point there was some burger meat that had E. coli in it, and for the beginning umpteen weeks, Jack in the Box did not regret it. I think the lawyers told them they should not regret it, and they for weeks were saying it was the beef supplier's fault. We buy our beef from such and such a supplier, and it's their fault. Well, people do not go into Jack in the Box and say, who is your beef supplier? They go in and they get a Jack in the Box burger. And children died from that incident. And it was weeks and weeks later when they finally did response and restitution, and it was really late, and it damaged the company. Donna and Arthur are pointing out on the Tylenol incident how well Johnson & Johnson, oh, I was right, Johnson & Johnson, handled the incident, and the company came out of it stronger than ever. So in a crisis, it is regret, response, and restitution. I see, and Arthur's pointing out the horse meat situation in the UK. Oh, yes, that has made headlines as well. Talk about change, conflict, and controversy, but the manufacturers, by dealing with it and being very responsive right away, is going to help with trust. And so, you know, that's transparency and trust, so that, you know, it all comes together in a circle. So some words about some tips and advice after having been banged up over the years, and others may have tips to share as well, but I'll share with you some of mine. So I have talked a lot about your agenda, and I truly believe that is the number one thing that you need to care for and think about and hone and write out and have proof points for. I think that's very important. But presentation is important too, and there is some research to suggest that as much as 93% of an audience's reaction are the nonverbals. So, you know, if you've ever been in a presentation and you see the presenter and you're looking at the back of their head, actually, because they're looking at the slide deck, you know, that is quite a different experience that you as an audience member is having. And one thing I'd like to point out to you is that a neutral face can actually look hostile. And that is true in any setting. So I'm going to just show you, and it just means physically no muscle tone in the facial muscles, no tension in the facial muscles. So I'm just going to show it to you that it looks hostile. Can you see that? Just raise your hands if you felt you could see that looked hostile. Yeah, it looks hostile. Thank you. I'm not saying you should grin all the time. There's clearly times when grinning is not appropriate. But a slight muscle tension in the face, slight muscle tension, I mean, I'm not smiling, but this is a little bit of muscle tension, it just doesn't look hostile. And you can practice that in a mirror, you can practice it with your iPhone, just take a look, because you may be sitting in a client meeting, a staff meeting, and you may be over there looking hostile. So just want to think about that. Joni says I look scary. You know, it's just something to think about. And when you look across the table in a staff meeting and you see somebody who looks hostile, you might want to give them some feedback, because chances are they don't know, unless they're actually mad. But anyway, it's good to be aware of what we're doing. Be compelling. Here's some tips on how to be compelling. So, look, I know we all have our own jargon, Every group has its own jargon. Here in Arlington, we have something called the General Land Use Plan, and around here we call it the GLUP. So that doesn't mean anything to anybody except those of us who know what the GLUP is. So I made this alphabet soup. I just thought that was kind of funny. But don't use jargon unless you are 100% sure that the other person knows what it is. You need to clarify. You need to ask. You need to say, oh, the General Land Use Plan. We call it the GLUP. From that point forward, you could probably say GLUP, but you need to have explained it. Use examples and anecdotes. They're very powerful. I really believe that long after we're done here, you will remember some of these anecdotes. Maybe you'll remember about Anne Hathaway. Maybe you'll remember about Robin McNeil after you've forgotten the concept. So examples and anecdotes are very powerful, and they're more memorable. Use humor wisely. Basically, don't do it. Don't do it. There are so many ways that this can bite you. If you feel compelled to be funny, the only acceptable humor is against yourself. But even then, you need to be careful. You may remember this happened a couple of years ago. President Obama was talking about his own bowling and making fun of himself bowling. But he said, my bowling's so bad, it's like Special Olympics. Well, that's bad because now he's making fun of Special Olympics. So that was a firestorm for a few days. So basically, use humor wisely. It is the safest to try to not be funny. Just don't be funny. This is not the time, okay? It just flashed in my head that Friends episode where Chandler in a job interview was trying to be funny and it totally backfired on him. So don't be funny, okay? Be human. Speak conversationally. It's you don't want to be like a press release. You don't want to be like corporate. You really want to be a human. One of the ones that really sticks out on my mind about this is Michael Dukakis, presidential candidate some years ago, and he was it was during one of the debates, and Bernard Shaw of CNN asked him the question, something like, if your wife was raped, would you want the rapist to have the death penalty? And Michael Dukakis is a lawyer and a constitutional scholar, and he answered as a constitutional expert. And it looked very cold. It was very technical and you know, knowledgeable, but very cold. And, you know, he probably needed to just be human and say either, oh my gosh, Bernie, what an awful question. Reframe it. I think what you're asking me about is my thoughts on the death penalty, and let me talk about that. But at least be human about it. Suggest solutions. There's always a solution. Don't get mired in the detail and your expert knowledge of everything that went wrong. Come up and talk about solutions. Use concise sentences. It's challenging, especially for experts. You really do know a lot. And this is why you actually need to have an agenda, practice, feedback. One of the best inventions are these little smartphones. You know, I used to tell people, buy a little camera. Well, now you have one all with you all the time. Practice. Either practice, use the voice memo or use the camera. Just practice your answers. Practice your sound bites. Look at them. Before you leave a voicemail, listen to it. Record the voicemail. Listen to it. I guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, you're going to re-record it, and the second time is going to be much tighter. Give it a try. Just feedback. Really good. Don't over-answer. If you have done your A=Q+1, you did a good job. It's okay to stop. Sometimes they might be quiet, thinking that you might say, well, there was that one time that, you know, we made a mistake. It's okay to be quiet. You've done your A=Q+1, move on, make another point. You say, well, the other thing I'd like to point out is that we have, you know, tremendous market share. Stay cool. This is a little bit like the golf pros. You're sitting up on the golf tee and they're telling you a million things and you're trying to remember the grip and the plane and everything. There's a lot here. You can do it, but you need to stay calm. You cannot do it if you're upset or angry. So you really need to be quiet and calm and think about everything and move through your agenda. And hit the softball. Sometimes we're so prepared for the nasty questions that we're not prepared for the good questions. We're not prepared for the softballs. So be prepared for the softballs too. They might get thrown at you. And at the end of an interview, usually the reporter or the interviewer will say, well, that's it for me. Do you have anything you want to add? You're so thankful it's over. You say, no, that was it. I think you covered it all, and you want to run away. That's your softball. That's your chance to wrap up all your points and hit it out of the park. So think about and remember and be prepared for the softballs. Oh, Amy, thank you for your comment. Yes, scary faces are scary, hostile faces. So just, you know, you don't want to have a hostile face. So just remember that, unless you're in some kind of a situation. If you're going to have a hostile face, make sure it's one that you purposefully are wanting to give to your audience. This is the paranoid slide, which is just be paranoid. All microphones are hot. They are hot until they are off your body and you're driving away. There are so many terrible examples of when this has happened. This one, you may remember President Joe Biden, after the health care bill was signed, whispered to President Obama that it was a, well, he actually said the words, and that got caught on the microphone. So every microphone is hot. Well, there's just a lot of bad examples. Anyway, don't go off the record. There's so many ways to do this, off the record, on background, on deep background, not for attribution. The point is, if you do not want to see it printed in the paper, do not have it leave your lips. Just think about it that way. There's a lot of ways that it can end up in the paper. So don't go off the record. If you don't know it, don't fake it. You can try your A equals Q plus one, give a good answer on that topic, bridge to your agenda, do all of that. And if they want some specific number, you know, what is the specific budget number? You say, I don't really remember, but what I can tell you is it's a really important program to us, and let me talk about that. You can do all of that. And if they still want the very specific number and you don't remember it exactly, don't guess. Just say, I'll get back to you. What's your deadline? But be sensitive to that deadline. Again, you're building trust. And never lie. Now, this is different from spill your guts. So you need to have your agenda. You need to be prepared for bad questions. You need to know what you are going to say. But we never, 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 never lie. And it ain't over till it's over. And it's not over until you're in your car driving away. I was doing this training for a group of executives, and at this point, one of them started laughing hysterically, and I said, okay, you know, what is so funny? And he said, well, he had used to work at Citibank, and he said that there was a executive that was doing an interview with a reporter, and they did the interview, they closed it up, he walked her to the elevator, and she says, oh, come on, you know, what would you really tell people to do with their money? And he said, well, I would tell them to put it in their mattress. And that was funny, and they laughed, and, you know, she left. And the next day in the paper, there it was, you know, Citibank executive says you should put your money in your mattress. So there's an example of use humor wisely. That's not too good, and it ain't over till it's over. And, you know, some of the other banks kind of made fun of that after that, saying, you know, come over to our bank. So, you know, and it ain't over till it's over. Use humor wisely. You might be asked some tough questions. Reporters can have some techniques of their own. So one is speculation. And that is, you know, what would happen if the recession lasts for 10 more years? What would happen if you lose the big contract? The thing is here, you don't need to speculate. Well, we hope that doesn't happen. I think you're really asking me about our plans for the future, and let me talk about that. You can reframe, you can go to your agenda. A or B is a cousin of that. Which would you rather have? Happy customers or better, you know, a positive third quarter? You don't have to choose. They're asking you to choose. You don't have to choose. And I think we can have both. One of my favorite stories about A or B that I have about this is there was a gentleman who bought the New York Rangers some years ago, and his name was Cohen, and he had not owned a sports franchise before. And his press conference to announce the purchase or announce the new owner, a reporter asked him, you know, Mr. Cohen, you're a businessman, you've not owned a sports team before, you know, which is more important to you, winning the Stanley Cup or having a profitable team? And he actually answered, well, I'm a businessman, so I would have to say the bottom line. And, you know, of course, he was dubbed Bottom Line Cohen and did not engender himself to the fans. And, you know, it's too bad because, you know, he could have so easily answered, well, I am a businessman, so I plan to run an efficient operation, but nothing would make me prouder than to bring home to the loyal fans of New York the Stanley Cup. You know, it's just, you don't have to choose. Loaded preface or repeating a negative is, you know, that you get asked a question that's very, very nasty. You know, why is it that you're trashing the environment? And you know, you're so taken aback that you say, no, we're not trashing the environment. And why you don't want to say that is you don't want to have the bad thing leaving your lips, because then you've got a potential quote saying, executive says, not trashing the environment. So you just want to say, absolutely not. You just don't want to repeat the negative. One of the more famous ones of these is Richard Nixon. Boy, all of my examples are so old. Richard Nixon was asked, this is after Watergate, something about the American people, what do you say to the American people who think you're a crook? And he said, I am not a crook. He literally said, I am not a crook. And this today is a rather famous quote. So had he said, absolutely not, or I'm saddened, or any other answer than I am not a crook, it probably would not be a quote that we remember today. And machine gun approach. You might be asked questions, gosh, in any setting, really, really rapid fire, very, very fast, one after the other, throwing you off kilter. You want to just answer them at your pace. You want to have your agenda clearly in your mind. And if you're on the phone, obviously you can have your agenda clearly on your desk and on a piece of paper in front of you and just move through it very, very clearly and just go through it systematically. So answer at your own pace. And the granddaddy question is probably, can you guarantee that there'll never be a spill at this location? Can you guarantee me you'll never raise prices? Can you guarantee me? I mean, that's the granddaddy, because the short answer is no. But you can say, you know, there's a lot of things you can say. Well, I think you're really asking, you can reframe. I think you're really asking me about how seriously we take safety at this plant. Well, let me talk to you about that. We have a great safety program. You can say, I can guarantee you we're going to have the high safety plan. I guarantee you we're going to work with the community. I can guarantee you we're going to work with the US EPA. I can guarantee you. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can say, but you don't need to fall into that trap. On the telephone, if the phone rings and is actually a reporter or your job interviewer or any such interviewer, you can buy yourself some preparation time. You can say, oh, I was about to run into a meeting, but let me take your questions. What is it that you want to talk to me about, and what's your deadline? And I'll call you back. So then you can get ready, get your agenda out, scribble some notes, and have them in front of you. Establish an interview mindset. You know, close your door, put a sign on your door. I actually don't have a door, but, you know, make some signs. Say I'm on an interview. Don't be multitasking. This is not the time to be signing expense reports and checking email. No multitasking. This is clear your desk. Have your notes. use flags. I've tried to do some verbal flags with you here today to say, look, if you only remember one thing, remember this. You can use verbal flags on the phone. The really important thing for your customers to know is this. The really important thing for your readers to know is this. Use verbal flags. That's heightening the possibility that your listener is going to be taking notes and writing these things down and paying attention, and you getting into that 2% retention. In summary, hopefully you've heard these three things that I've said, and that is, if you can advance your agenda and bridge to it and speak in headlines, those are really the main points that I wanted to get across to you today, and the technique of how to do those things. And let me come over here to this question. Burke has said, when you have 10 great product attributes, the ones you don't choose as primary are necessary to make the argument of why you are different from the competition, how to bring in the secondary attributes. You have 10, I'm not sure I understand the question, let me try to understand it. Burke, can you maybe amplify that a little bit? You have 10 great product attributes. Of the 10, there are certain ones that are primary, but you need to make the argument. Are you arguing, is it a defensive posture? Is that they asked you some questions and you're trying to answer those questions, or these are the proactive messages that you're trying to get across? I would think with 10 great product attributes, you would need to at least bucket them in three umbrella buckets. So you've got 10 great attributes. Could they not be bucketed? Could one bucket be the money part of it? Could one bucket be the long-lasting quality part of it? Could one bucket be could they be bucketed in three main buckets? And that way you could always come back up to a higher level and advance your higher level agenda and bring in the proof points under that. I'm wondering if that would help you. If I didn't answer you, go ahead and write me a different question. So you can bring them all in. I thought you said you couldn't. What I'm suggesting, and here, let me use this possibly as an example. This might help. When I first joined Arlington County, I felt like there were a million and one positive things we could say about the county. So what I did is, I'm a former consultant, and every former consultant has a Venn diagram. So I made this Venn diagram. And this is what I consider the high level, 10,000 foot agenda, if you will, or message box for the county. So there are three main messages, that it's a great place to live, it's a great place to do business and invest, and we are innovative. And you can see those are the three big circles. But underneath each one, I put proof points. And those are, if you think about, Burke, your 10 great product attributes, they could be in three huge buckets. Each of your 10 attributes comes in as the proof points underneath why it's a great place to live, why it's a great product value. Okay, you'd have some of the attributes under that one. And I realize you can't read what I'm holding up. I just hope to get across the point of the Venn diagram. I'll give this to Mary Ann as a handout to post with everything else. So your 10 attributes, okay, Burke, okay, so so hopefully, Burke, that made sense, that your individual attributes could come in as proof points under, hopefully, three big umbrella points about your product. Okay, good. Okay, so good, that made sense. I've got a couple of minutes left, so if I can amplify anything that we brought in earlier, I'm happy to do that, and I'll also go back up to the beginning of the chat and see if there were some comments that people made earlier that I could address. So people earlier talked about communications goals of various stakeholders, email. Email is, you can still think about the main point that would help you there, elevator speech. Hopefully I've given you some techniques that will help you with some of these issues that you brought up.
Diana, I'm going to jump in here. There are some more questions coming in, and I want to let everyone know that Diana has agreed to stay online for further questions. So please stay with us, and you can type your questions in the chat box. But before we get back to Diana, I'd like to mention a few things. First, I'd like to give a big thank you to Diana for her very helpful webinar, and let you know that our next Friday Forum webinar will be on Friday, April 12th, when Ann Mills tells us about StrengthsFinder and how you can develop your strengths. You can register for that and other upcoming webinars on our website at alumni.virginia.edu under Career Services. Thank you to everyone who have joined us today. We appreciate you spending your time with us, and we hope that you found Diana's information helpful. And the next time you are in front of any audience, you will get your point across. As always, we have been recording today's webinar, and you will receive a link to the webinar recording in an email later today. So now let's go back to Diana, and she'll answer a few more questions.
Okay. All right. There's some good questions here. So let me just, Benjamin is asking, what are some specific important questions that I should always be ready to answer in an interview? Benjamin, are you thinking media interview or are you thinking job interview? Could you write me? Job interview. On the defensive side, if there is anything in your resume that is worrisome, or oh, I hope they don't ask me about that, or that's an odd thing, I would say you need to be prepared to answer that. Recent master's degree graduate. Also, Mary Ann is with the Career Services group at Alumni Hall, and I believe, Mary Ann, am I right, you all could provide some actually better help on that particular point of job interview questions, I would think. But from my standpoint, I would be prepared to answer anything that you would be afraid to ask, and also I would be prepared to give your answers on the positive agenda points that you want to advance. So whatever they ask you, you need to be prepared to use them to make your main points. So from my standpoint, those are my two pieces of advice. Sharon C. For internal communications, what are your thoughts on 7x7 ways? I am not familiar with that exact thing, but I assume you're talking about kind of repeating messages in different ways. Repeating, yes. So I sometimes call that layered communications, where it's said here, and then it's said here a different way, and maybe there's a video that somebody's talking about it, and maybe it's an email, and then maybe it's on the internal website, maybe there's a newsletter, maybe you send talking points out to the supervisors, and they reinforce it. There is some research that shows that people really prefer to hear information from their supervisors. So there's a point to this layering. You know, the CEO can do this, the supervisors need to do this, but it's all up and down and across. So it's not just the CEO, it's not just the supervisor, it's not just any one thing. And probably that is what you were talking about in terms of 7x7 ways. That makes sense to me. And I have to react to Arthur. Hey, getting sore and Zora saying hello. Oh my gosh, I haven't, yay. Good to see you guys. Okay, let me go back to the questions. Joni is asking, can you share an example of a slam dunk from your own experience? I'll tell you one that really sticks out in my mind. This is probably not my best slam dunk, but one that really sticks out in my mind for being a, you know, lemonade one is I used to work for Capital One, and I was the head of corporate communications at Capital One, and we had a situation that dragged on for a number of months, but this is a long time ago, probably in the early 90s, back when companies were still using microfiche. Some of you may not even know what that is. It's an antique technology. But we had had a very unfortunate situation where there was a group of microfiche that should have been destroyed, and a box ended up in the creek in Richmond and floating all over the place, and it had customer records on it. Not good. And so we were really, there was a lot of negative press in the local paper for days and days and days and days, and it was just terrible. And everybody at the company just felt like we were under siege. I just had to stay cool, stay on message, be prepared, answer these questions, advance my agenda. And I just did it, you know, for weeks and weeks. And at one point, the reporter asked me, you know, because she really was convinced that there was some nefarious, like, evil thing that had happened. It really wasn't. It was just a dumb thing that happened. So she just was digging for the nefarious thing. And at one point she asked me, you know, what do the employees feel like working there, you know, with this going on? And I said, you know, they're really sad because this is a great place to work and we have these unbelievable benefits. And let me talk to you about what it's like to work here. And let me talk to you about the employee surveys. And let me talk to you how the people feel about how they love working here. And so, you know, that day went on, and a number of weeks, it even could have been months later, there was a national story that appeared in the Associated Press about comparing U.S. benefits to European benefits and how our benefits are so much lower, especially on the vacation arena. And the Richmond Times-Dispatch wanted to do a sidebar story on local benefits, and the headline was Capital One Plan Generous. And it was a whole story that came out of that conversation that I'd had with her in the middle of a crisis. And that, to me, was a real silver lining that came out of a horrible, horrible time. So not really a slam dunk, but it's really memorable to me. Another one that is really memorable to me is when I was with Capital One, we were coming out with a new product, a new card, and there were some folks on my team who were sending me around to do a promotional tour, and they booked me on a show in New York, and we did some research and found that that was a Consumer Reporter. So the night before I went up there, we sat in the office with a camcorder. And no iPads available back then, with a camcorder, and my team threw every ugly question that you could possibly throw at me about credit, debt, issuers, loans, anything. And the next day when I got up there, she did ask me a lot of those questions, and there was not a question she asked me that I had not been asked the night before. And so that was not a fun interview, but so I don't know if you'd call it a slam dunk, but I was totally prepared for it. So I hope that answers your questions. I mean, some of my more memorable things are kind of coming out of negative experience, but I think it's because they're so difficult that coming out of it is just, it's very rewarding. You know, you come out and you're still ambulatory. Amy is asking, can you speak to prepping for TV versus print? In television and in radio, there is obviously a much greater emphasis on technique. On the physical, on the presentation. So, you know, I showed you that neutral face. You certainly don't want to do that. For television, you want to have eye contact. Your short answers are crucial. You want to avoid a lot of loud, jangly jewelry. For men, everybody wants to avoid small prints because they tend to moiré on the screen. Boy, if you had 4 hours, I could do a great television prep session for you. But there's a lot more emphasis on technique. And again, I would say just, you know, there is no substitute for practicing in front of a camera and looking at the feedback. Practice and feedback. Get people on your team to help you. You guys know what the questions are. You know what the questions to be afraid of are, and just practice and feedback. That's probably the best piece of advice I could give you. Let's see. Okay, I'm coming down. Oh, and Marianne is giving advice about the job interview process with Interview Stream. Oh, that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I think there was one last question that we can address before signing off about, it's from Sarah.
Okay, any specific tips on recovering quick if you blank after being asked your questions? Yes, that does happen. So if you are on the phone or the radio, obviously you can have your points in front of you, and that should help. If you aren't, and actually on television, I've put talking points on a piece of paper and put them under my shoe at my feet, and I look down and I've looked at them. I've done that. I've also held them on my hand. So, I mean, you actually, there's ways to do that as well. I think the best way to think of it is if you do literally have a piece of paper with your agenda and you think about your three main points. They are big, they are bold, and then your proof points are underneath. When you glance down at that piece of paper, you are looking at three big, bold statements. And remember, research tells us people can remember three different things before your interview. You ought to be able to remember the three main points. So if you really blank out, go to your shelter, run to one of those points. Hopefully that will help. You may not remember all the details, but if you can hit the point, at least some part of the point, your brain is an amazing thing. It actually will probably come in and help you as your mouth is even speaking on that big, bold point. I hope that's helpful.
Well, thank you so much, Diana, and thank you, everyone, from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association. Everyone have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time on Friday, April 12th.
Wahoo!